Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session for Mesa City Council for Monday, May 3rd, 2010. First of all, we'd like to excuse Vice Mayor Kyle Jones, who's out of town and will not be joining us, at least for this meeting, on the phone. And then also Councilmember Summers is on his way, running a little bit late, so we'll start without him. The first item on the agenda is to review the items on the agenda for tonight's regular city council meeting. Page 2. Page 3.
Mayor.
Mr. Brady.
Hello. Mike. Holstein. Is he here? Oh, there he is. I was looking away. You come up for a second. There were some questions about the... it's related to this item because it's related to the Webster School Scholarship Program, or the, not school, recreation.
Summer Recreation Scholarship.
Can you talk about some of the things that your staff's been working on regarding that specific program?
Okay.
As far as getting the funding for that?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Mike Holstein. I'm the Recreation or Assistant Director over Recreation Operations. And what we've done to try and generate some scholarship or some fees to assist some of our participants for the summer, we've worked closely with several of our partners, the Mesa Public Schools and the Cardin Hospital, and they have come forward. We've generated about $2,000 through the MLK basketball tournament. We generated $2,000 from the from the HoHo Cam Foundation. Cardin Hospital donated $6,800 for a new health camp that we're going to be running this summer. So those are areas. So far to date, we've generated about $16,000 in funds that are going to be used strictly for scholarships and fee assistance for youth in the summer programs.
So, Mayor and Council, I wanted Mike to bring that up because that relates to one of the items that was not recommended for funding under the CBG Public Service Webster Recreation Center. I think the staff has been able to find some ways to raise some of those fees to help with those scholarship funds. And even if they needed to supplement that, I think what we would propose is that during the year, if that's a need, we could come back to council to amend this budget. If that's where we're working with Mike and his staff or Mark and his staff, we could come back. But I think we're well on our way to having most of that already funded, it sounds like. Through their efforts of working in the community, so that we would make sure that the fee assistance for these participants would be available. And it says 750, Mike, but you believe that number, some of that may be the same.
Well, it's 750, actually, it's 750 scholarships. So, for example, we have some programs that pay per week. We have some that pay per 2 weeks. We have some that pay per month. And by doing that, $10,000 could accommodate, for example, 500 scholarships in the weekly program, where instead of it being a $25 fee to the participants, it would be lowered to $1,250. Some of our monthly programs, for example, our half-day programs are $100. For a four-week program, we could accommodate or waive the fee down to a $50 fee instead. So overall, by adding all of those scholarships together, how we figured that the people would use them, we could accommodate 750 scholarships or fee assistance. It may be the same person getting a couple of the, so it may not be exactly 750 different people, but there'd be 750 different scholarships which would be awarded.
So what I'm hearing is that one way or another, we're going to take care of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else, Mr. Brady? Okay. Page 3 again. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Mr. Kavanaugh.
I have a question on 10G just with regard to the lease with the DMA. I toured the building a couple of weeks ago, and one concern I had for another potential user was the bathroom facilities and the air conditioning. And I'm just wondering if the current restroom facilities and air conditioning units on that site are adequate or up to today's code for a tenant use? And if not, as the way I read the lease, I think the cost is going to be, would fall on DMA. Am I correct?
Well,
Craig,
good morning.
Please turn on there now.
All right, yes, correct.
Okay,
that is,
I'll turn it off.
Sorry. is there something?
All right, I just seemed to have a question. I didn't think the building met current codes just in terms of restroom facilities, and that's where I was. I just had a concern, and I'm assuming that this is something
I can't speak to the code, but I know whatever the obligation would be financially would be borne by the DMA. Trish, do you have it?
The air conditioning, I had facilities maintenance look at that a couple of weeks ago, and they had to fix some part on that, and they're doing that. So I know we've taken care of the air conditioning. I don't know about the bathrooms, if they meet code or not. We can look at that. But the lease does say that it's the responsibility of the lessor.
Right.
Of DMA.
The lessee.
The lessee. Lessee.
And when we're talking about bathrooms being code, basically we're talking about ADA type requirements, right?
ADA.
Yeah. Number of bathrooms in ADA for the use.
You have a thing about bathrooms, don't you?
I do. Okay, thank you.
So we'll check that.
Thank you. Thank you, Trish.
Mayor Higgins. Just a question. Will there be a, first of all, you need to introduce yourself.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Councilman Mayor, Freddie Curry, DMA Chair, Board Chair.
Awesome. Thanks. Is there going to be any kind of cost of you actually moving in, like phone line changes, that type of thing?
Yes, there will be costs associated with the move that we have a reserve fund set aside to do that move.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other questions on that? Okay. Thank you, Freddie. Anything else on page 7? Page 8? Okay. Next, we will hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction related to the Employee Benefit Trust and after the EBT fire.
So, Mayor and Council, while Gary and Jody are coming up to make that presentation, let me just put this in context. One of the things that we try to do as we go through the review of the budget each year is we want to make sure that not only we're trying to identify the issues that are before us immediately that we're trying to solve as far as the current budget forecast, but also we begin to identify issues that may have multiple year impacts on the city. And this is certainly one of those. And while we are bringing this up in the midst of our current budget discussions, we thought it was important to at least begin laying out some of the challenges that we're seeing into the future. Some more immediate possibly than others, but this is not impacting the current budget shortfall in the context of meeting decisions today. We've had to, we've included $2.9 million support the Employee Benefits Trust Fund that's already included, or that's included in our discussions now for the budget. But what we're presenting to you really is not that necessarily, but it's identifying that there are certainly challenges, and it's not just Mesa. This is a national issue as far as the rising cost of benefits going forward. We just want to start laying out some of the challenges and beginning to define, if you would, some of the policies or concepts we're going to be working on this summer. The employee benefits, and I'm not trying to take too much away from your presentation, Gary, decisions for the employees takes place on the calendar year, not necessarily the fiscal year. But we'll need to begin working with our employee groups and be helping to look at some of the challenges and how we're going to address those in the future over the summer, so that as we go into the next benefits schedule year for 2011, that we can begin implementing some of these. So we would come back to council with that plan. We just want to start laying out some of the issues before you now, so you can start understanding this. It's somewhat complicated, but I think it would be good to start having the dialogue. We've already started talking to the employees about the challenges that are ahead of us as far as the cost containment and the issues related to this benefit. So with that, Gary?
Good afternoon, Mayor Smith, members of council. I'm Gary Manning. I'm the Human Resources Director. And with me today is Jody Topping, our benefits administrator. And for a few minutes this afternoon, we wanted to talk to you about some increased costs that we're seeing in our employee medical benefits, as well as some changes we're likely going to need to make in order to ensure the health of our benefit trust fund. Just by way of some background, the city currently provides four main types of insurance benefits. We have our medical, our dental, our vision, and our life. And within those insurance benefits, employees have an opportunity to choose various plans depending on what their needs are. These plans are largely financed through funding by city contributions, as well as employee contributions in the form of premiums. And we do receive some contribution in terms of subsidies from the state related to our employees who retire but elect to keep our medical benefits as opposed to accept those that are offered by the state or through ASRS. Currently, the combined contributions that we receive from the city as well as our employees are covering the costs of our dental, vision, and life plans. The biggest concern that we have really rests with the four medical plans. And by that, I mean the combined contributions of the city and our employees really are not covering the actual full costs of those plans. And unfortunately, the gap between revenue and expenses is growing wider, and we would anticipate that it's going to continue to get wider if we don't take some kind of adjustment or corrective measure. This graph shows actual medical expenses for active employees, retirees, and dependents paid out over the last several years, and what we estimate those medical expenses will be for the next 3 years. The future estimates assume an annual anticipated increase of about 12%. If you look at the green line for actives, for example, in 2004, total medical expenses were about $16.8 million. And those expenses have grown steadily over time. And in 2009, those total expenses were about $31.6 million. And we anticipate those costs will increase each year. The increase in medical costs, as you're probably aware, is not entirely unexpected. The national trend is about 10 to 11% each year, meaning all things being equal, we could logically anticipate roughly a 10 to 11% increase in our medical costs. That trend held steady for us for a good number of years, but within the last 12 months, we've seen an increase in our medical costs that are really beyond what that national trend is, upwards of about 16% for the city of Mesa. And we could talk about what really some of the reasons are for that and drill deep in some of the statistics that we've looked at, but suffice it for us here today that really one of the primary drivers behind those greater than expected increased costs really comes from utilization. We've just had lots of employees submit medical claims. For example, in 2008-09, we actually had 18,000 more medical claims than we did the prior year. You combine that with some very expensive, high-dollar claims that we've received, and that largely goes towards explaining why we've had such an increase in the amount of cost to our benefit totals.
Councilmember Richens.
I got to apologize for the utilization. Me and my four kids, just they were sick a lot that year. A lot of ear infections. I apologize.
I understand.
That's, I feel partly to blame for that. Are we still offering retirees health coverage for? We have existing employees and then new hires after a certain date. I know that there is some discussion about not offering future employees healthcare retirement benefit.
Yes.
What's the status with that right now?
As of January 2009, because of our other post-employment benefit costs that we had to calculate because of the GASB, we did suspend that post-retirement medical benefits for those that were hired after January of 2009. That is currently under review, and as you know, currently an employee needs to be with the City of Mesa for 20 years before they're even entitled to receive those medical benefits. So we felt like we had some time really to evaluate the finances of the city and what our competitive edge may or may not be as a result of suspending those. We're also looking at some possibilities of post-employment health plans or retirement health plans to sort of offset some of that suspension that we've had. But currently, as we speak, those benefits have been suspended as of January 2009. And yes, we're still offering retiree medical benefits to those that are on the plans today.
Councilmember Higgins?
And how does the state retirement benefits? These people who won't receive city benefits still receive benefits under the state retirement system?
Well, once you retire from the city and you are eligible for city medical benefits, meaning you've met the required number of years that you have to be with us, employees by and large really do have an option. They can stay with our medical benefits and continue on as a retiree with the premiums that are established, or they don't really have to go with our medical benefits. They can seek their own private medical insurance, and the state ASRS does offer a medical plan. Most of our employees stay with ours because it's a better deal than what they offer through the state. But as a result of our employees staying with our medical plan, as I said, we do receive a bit of a subsidy from the state, and really that is dependent upon factors such as the age of the employee, how long they've contributed to ASRS, that kind of thing. But we do receive a monthly subsidy in exchange for them retaining our benefits as opposed to going with the state.
Do our benefits, you don't need to get detailed there, just as a matter of information. When someone hits 65, how does our medical work with Medicare?
Well, at age 65, we do have employees choose Medicare as the primary insurance. Can we cover any more of that?
Then ours becomes a supplemental or
secondary.
Secondary.
Yes, ma'am.
I like that. I said supplemental. 8 people. No, secondary. Sorry, I'm not as close to 65 as others in the room, so I would know these kind of things.
You're closer than others.
Okay, Councilmember Fenter.
Just a couple of points. You mentioned about you're looking at what alternatives there might be for these new hires. I hope, we've been a year now. I hope we don't go too much longer and be able to come back and some 40K or 401K product or some product that these people can be building something and looking for an opportunity. I know that'll be the topic of much discussion. The only other thing I would mention, and maybe it's the thing we don't want to mention, is this sharp rise, 16% utilization. The talk out there is that people are concerned about benefits going away or the possibility that loss of job. And so it seems like there's been kind of a run on the system. So I don't know how we can quell that. It might be to our best interest to be able to calm some of those fears and concerns. And I know other considerations of spouses that were currently employed that don't have that job anymore and coming back in. So a lot to look at, and I'm hoping that we as an organization can look at what we can do to quell calm the concerns there. It'll save us money in the long run. So.
Yes, Councilmember Fincher, we agree with that the more information that we can get out, the better it would be.
I'm just glad we have a national health plan that none of us have to worry about this at all in a couple of years.
Not until 2014.
We have some time.
And Mayor and Council, we're certainly, all those issues are being discussed. Again, as Gary pointed out, any benefit for retirees, wouldn't be eligible for 20 years after they're hired. And at the since that, we suspended that benefit, our hire rate has been significantly less than it has been in the past years. So we certainly feel like while we understand we need to get something completed, we were really not putting in question a lot of employees anyway. But there are other methods to doing this. If the Finance and Audit Committee recall that we talked about the impacts of OPED on our balance sheet, which was over $600 million for the first time showed up as a liability. And that certainly is a significant number that comes into play. So what we're trying to look at is saying maybe the traditional ways that we have funded retiree health benefits in the past, there are other options we want to look at, and we want to be careful about that, creating those future liabilities for the city. But there are programs out there that we think may be beneficial that we'll keep exploring. But we may come up with a program, but it may not need funding from the city for years into the future because they wouldn't be eligible for 20 years until after they're hired to receive that benefit anyway.
But I'm hoping we are worried about things that happen 20 years.
We are.
A lot of decisions we make on this council, whether it be a zoning case or whatever, really are not going to come to fruition for 10, 15, 20 years anyway.
Right.
And I think we have to start looking at it right now.
And that's for that very reason we suspended the program, because that's exactly how that actuarial is calculated. It's upon the impact 20, 30 years from now.
Right.
and I think everyone understands that all benefits, pension otherwise, you know, they've been in a state of transition for the last 10 years, and it's not the 800, it's about the 1,500-pound gorilla that's in there for companies and for governments as to how we're going to deal with it, and we're just going to have to deal with it somehow,
right?
Because the world's changed.
Yes.
And you know, things that worked 15 years ago are not going to work 15 years from now, and we just got to realize that and deal with it. So I'm glad that we're looking at this.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Slide five. The city's currently proposed budget contribution for fiscal year 10-11 for all benefits is about $38.6 million. Of that amount, contributions for medical amount to about $30.7 million, and that is divvied off between active and retired employees as well. It's important to remember, as Chris mentioned to you, that as we look at the numbers, it's good to note that the city contributions are budgeted on a fiscal year, whereas our medical plans are really managed on more of a calendar year basis. Between 2008 and through 2011, we anticipate the city's medical costs to have increased by about 42%. And despite those increases, another important point to remember is that employee contributions have not changed since January of 2008. Between the economy being poor, the 2.5% across the board, layoffs, suspension of merits, we really felt like we didn't want to hit employees any harder with higher premiums. And quite frankly, for a number of years, there really wasn't a compelling need to do so. The Employee Benefit Trust was healthy, and it was able to sustain those reductions. But unfortunately, as the next few slides, I think, will show to you, that's probably not a trend that we're going to be able to continue. This slide shows what we will be seeing if the city continues to increase its contributions at 10.1% per year, but there is no change in employee contributions. The green represents the employees' contributions staying steady where they are now. The red represents the city's increased contributions at 10.1% per year, and the blue line represents what the total costs are in medical expenses. And really, the most important part of that graph is the space, or the gap, between the top of those red lines and the blue line. That gap really represents what the city has to fund beyond what was budgeted. This is the amount really that we will be eating into fund balance, or the employee trust fund, or maybe another way to look at it. It really represents the difference between what the medical plans are costing us and what we're receiving in combined contributions between the city and employees.
Well, actually, what you're saying is that the green contributions hold steady and the city's contributions go up, because I understand you're saying we're talking about city contributions, but basically we contribute up to the blue line.
Right.
That's correct.
That's exactly right. And Mayor, let's be careful. This is just, all we're saying is if we continue doing things the way we've been doing them since January 2008, this is what would happen.
This is what would
happen. This is not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're just saying what this point is in this point in time, we're saying we're looking out ahead and realizing this is not the current model, structure, how we pay for the health benefits plan. It has to change. It could be in the benefit that's offered. It could be in how the cost is shared. Any variety of things that we haven't made a decision on today. And none of these dollars are in a forecasted that compounding out to the future. We're just saying if we did nothing and kept continuing the current system, this was what would happen. What obviously the answer is, we're going to change, things are going to change, and we'll be able to address these numbers down here.
Just if I could simplify it, because this gets sort of, like you said, confusing. Our plan is set up to create premiums that match costs. That's the ideal situation.
Right. Yes.
You pay in $100 a month, and hopefully your costs are $100 a month. And what we say is that out of that $100 a month, we ask, and I'm picking this number out of the air, the employee to pick up a portion of that, let's say $10 a month, okay? Mm-hmm. But actually what we have is that since we're basically self-insured and we have this trust, what happens is that if that deviates at all from as far as costs going over, the city basically makes up the difference.
Right.
And so, you know, we try to set premiums so that they equal costs. If the premiums are over cost, you lower the premiums so the trust doesn't go in have too much. If you fall short, we got to make up the difference of the city out of either the trust or out of our funds, but the city basically pays that difference.
Yes, right? Mayor Smith, you're absolutely
right. So what you're saying is that right now, when you say the current system, what we're saying is that our calculations are that if we were to increase premiums based on what we think costs would go up, what's happening is that costs are going up much faster. So if we don't change the system somehow, either reduce costs, increase contributions, or do some sort of change in that, then we're going to be potentially faced with these shortfalls.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes.
Did I just simplify it or did I make it more complicated? Oh, thank you, Councilmember Higgins. Councilmember Summers.
I got it. The blue line here, what you have here is a projection over the next 3 to 4 years. What's the amount of money, what's the balance that's in the account right now to help pay for this? Is there a time over, say, the last 4 years where that blue line was below so that the premiums, to use the mayor's example, $100 came in, $10 in the premiums, and then the rest from the city, was more than the expenses so that we had actually a fund balance? What is the fund balance, and given this projection, how long would it take to spend that entire fund?
And let's talk about the inventory benefits trust fund has a balance, but it really serves a different purpose than what we kind of use for general fund contingencies. This is, you know, maybe Jody or Gary talked about the incurred but not reported. This is to be able to absorb.
Another thing about insurance is that, once again, those are meant to happen over time.
Right.
And so how insurance works is that you collect premiums now that you hope you pay out tomorrow. And what you're saying is that fund balance is made up of premiums we collected today. We hope someone doesn't get sick for a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months. Is that accurate?
Right.
Yes, Mayor, that is correct. Right now, the trust fund balance is sitting at about $16.5 million with not considering the IBNR. The IBNR is the incurred but not reported. Essentially what that is, are those are claims that have already occurred, people who have gone to the hospital or gone to the doctor, but we haven't seen those claims yet.
Paperwork hasn't come through yet.
Right. There's about a 40-day lag time between the time that the services are rendered until we actually process and pay that claim. So, again, we're sitting at about $16.5 million.
You know that because there was a pre-approval or some notice, or is that just sort of what happens normally?
That's pretty much what happens normally, right? It takes about 30 days for the claims to actually come in, and then there's a little bit of a lag within our office to get those done.
But at the end of the day, we have to have both that in a reserve, but we also have been drawing down the fund balance, meaning that we are not collecting both from the employees as well as what the city's having to put more into the fund each year in order to maintain that appropriate balance. Yeah.
Right. Mayor, after about 10 years ago, we had a situation where our trust fund balance was very, very low, like $60,000-some-odd. Yes. And so we worked very hard over those following years in order to build up that fund balance, just as Mr. Brady said, to make sure that we not only had enough to cover those incurred but not reported, but also to be able to build the fund up, just as you described, so that we're paying money in now so that we can then pay it out later. Well, later has come, unfortunately, and so now we're finding that we're paying out a lot more than we were even 5 years ago.
And you can see the numbers on the bottom of the page to talk about the gap. You can see in a period of a couple of years, we would completely wipe out what we have currently in that fund. So okay. we have some structural challenges that we've got to deal with so we can maintain an adequate reserve for this kind of fund because of the being able to absorb both increases that happen as well as the incurred but not reported. But you can see what we're seeing is that the structural imbalance is fairly significant and continues to grow. So we've got to make some changes in that pretty quickly.
And if I may, I think there's...
Chris, does this blue line take into account? What's a little disturbing is that the projections are going up significantly, and yet the number of employees are going down. I mean, we're down 10%+ in the number of employees. I would imagine that that's going to impact the model, not to mention what Councilmember Finter had referred to as a a rush on benefits before termination of employment. How does all this figure into whatever your model is? Or has it been?
The blue line really takes an assumption on what we anticipate the future costs will be. And we're figuring about 12% per year, which is right about the national average. In terms of number of employees, that also is factored.
Well, you factored in the number of employees, and so the blue line takes into account.
Takes all that.
Changes,
right.
Takes
right.
It all
this
account.
Is our best guess standing right here today based on the current number of employees we have. Granted, we understand that number may fluctuate a little bit, but when you get into it, the material impact are those increases in the overall plan, the 10%, the 12% annually. That's where it compounds on top of each other.
Yeah, really, and once again, this is not a bill where the invoice is going to be. This is just a projection.
This is a projection.
Assuming all these estimates hold true, assuming costs go up, assuming that, you know, maybe we did have a bubble here and maybe that evens out. We don't know. This is just a worst case almost scenario based on what we think is going on.
Right. Chuck. And probably to put it more in perspective, what we're recommending for this solution is the short term. We're just stepping it up to kind of close that gap until we can come back with those ideas and those recommendations that make more sense from a long term.
So we're trying to identify a problem out into the future. But we've got to start taking action now and not waiting out into the future. But we feel comfortable that we've got a plan that will be able to maintain ourselves, certainly during this period that we need to make these decisions. And we recognize some of these may be very dramatic decisions in the way we provide health benefits and how they're paid for. So this probably won't happen in just 1 year. We may take multiple years to phase it in with our employees. So there's a variety of things going on. We're not making that decision today. We're just letting council know we've identified an issue into the future, something we're going to have to work on, working with our employees and everybody else.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins, we need to move on.
How does this affect, you know, that we're self-insured? Would it be a different cost model if we were in a bigger pool and some other type of insurance scenario?
You know, we've taken a look as to whether or not we should maintain being self-insured as opposed to being fully insured through another company. We feel like we actually have the ability to reduce costs because we are self-funded. Going with a fully insured program, you really are on the hook with what their actuaries determine they think their estimated costs will be. They usually build in whatever administrative cushion on top of that it needs to be. And a number of cities, Jody could probably speak better to it than I can, but a number of cities really are trying to go away from the fully insured, go back to the self-insured model, because you really do have a lot more flexibility and the ability to keep costs a little bit lower.
Well, the difference is if they miss on their actuarial, they lose money.
Yeah, the risk
if
is
if we miss, we can catch up.
And, the risk and is get on to them. Eat.
Yeah, and so they're going to always lower their risk by building in more cushion, which means we're going to pay insurance upon insurance.
Yes, Mayor, that's correct.
Okay. All right, let's get through this pretty quickly because we have fire coming up. So,
Really, this slide helps identify another important issue that we'd like to identify and somehow address. One of the things that employees may not fully understand is the fact that under our current structure, some employees are receiving a higher level of city funding to their overall costs in their medical plans than are others. There is some disparity on what the city is actually contributing to employees in total based on those different plans. So let me give you just a quick example. We've highlighted for you two of our offered medical plans, the Choice Plan and our Copay Plan. These really are our two most popular plans. If you look at the second line there, it says Choice Family. The average estimated total cost per family per month for the Choice Family Plan is about $1,100 per month. And of that cost, the employee's contribution is about $168. The city's budgeted contribution is $672. Now, if you add the monthly member's contribution to the budgeted city contribution, you don't come up with $1,127. There's actually continues to be a difference. There's a gap that the city has to contribute on a monthly basis of about $287. Now, if you will compare that to the very last line and compare that to the copay plan, if an employee is on the family copay plan, we're estimating that the estimated average actual cost of that family copay plan per employee is about $1,500 a month. Of that, the monthly member contribution is $328, and the city contributes about $672. Again, you add those two together, and they don't add up to what the actual cost of the plan is. The city is actually, this is probably my word, the city is actually subsidizing a little bit, contributing more on behalf of employees that are on the family copay plan to the tune of about $547. So you can see that there's a difference between what the city in total is actually contributing to employees based on whatever plan there are, whether it's 287 or whether it's 547.
It throws the relationships out of whack.
Because, right.
You know,
yes.
On one hand, your difference is going down. On the other one, it's doubling.
Yeah, so this is, Mayor and Council, we don't need to dwell. This is just to show you this is another issue.
It's out of whack.
Actually, we go to the last slide. It kind of sets the goals, which includes this. It's just a way to begin educating everyone about the specific issues. So why don't you just cover the slide 8.
So really, we came up with kind of 4 goals that we need to continue to dialogue and discuss with you between now and the end of the year. One is really agree on an appropriate contribution philosophy, and that is what specific dollar amount should the city agree to that should be contributed to every employee depending on what plan they choose. That way, then, we provide employees the same credit towards each medical plan, and it doesn't differ, it doesn't vary, but we have a set dollar amount. We haven't talked about what that dollar amount should be, what that contribution philosophy should be, but we really believe to be equitable to all employees, it ought to be a consistent and set dollar amount. We also think on part 3 that employees in the city really need to pay equally the increased costs each year, whether we anticipate it's 10% or 12% or 7%, whatever it is, but both the city and the employees would then pay an equal share of that. The last thing is, as you can imagine, if we were to just jump into a major restructuring all of a sudden, employees could largely be paying a whole lot more than what they are today. So we really need to think about phasing this in maybe over a 1 or 2 or 3 year period. In order to limit the impact as best we can on our employees. And the last point, really to provide time to achieve those goals, it's going to be necessary to increase come July the city's contributions by about $4 million, of which $2.9 million is general fund.
Any questions? I would like to add one to this. It seems like our current rate structure gives no preference to encouraging employees to choose those programs that cost the city less. We sort of subsidize at equal levels, thereby incurring greater costs for ourselves. I'd like to see an emphasis, or when you come back, programs that encourage and actually reward employees who choose programs that cost the city less, and that also encourage preventative and other types of health care so that the overall cost is...
Yes, you're absolutely right on that.
That you emphasize those kind of things.
Yep, you bet.
Great, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We'll now hear from the Mace Fire Department. And Chiefs, I don't want to push you along, but we've got about 30 minutes. So if you want to pace yourself accordingly and get through as quickly as we can,
good shape. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. But I'd rather have stuff left at the end than have us caught catching up real quickly at the end, okay?
No question. Mayor, members of the council, as you recall, the last time we met with you regarding our budget reduction was last month. We were looking at a $3.7 million, 5% reduction across the board. We presented various alternatives for your review, and council was gracious and gave us considerable feedback. What we'd like to do this afternoon is essentially give you that feedback on your suggestions, and then talk in some fairly solid terms about alternatives that we think we can make work in terms of meeting our budget reduction. So with that, very briefly, I know everybody here knows me. I'm Harry Beck. I'm the fire chief. Dan Stubbs is to my left. He's our chief of operations. Redonna Orlando is in charge of management services for the fire department. And Chief Brady Leffler is in charge of community services. With that, I'm going to let Dan pick up the presentation and give you a little discussion, give you a little presentation on some of the alternatives.
Okay, Mayor and Council, I'll go over the reserve program, the lateral program, and the Italian 3 scenario. The reserve program, it was mentioned at the last time we met, and I'll go over this pretty quickly because it seems like a no-brainer to us. The focus of that is to maybe established a pool of part-time retirees to help offset some of our overtime and staff some of our support units. The bullet points down below, the age certification and the different things down there, are just some considerations that we have. None of these are deal killers. And just for example, the average age of our retirees for the last 4 years is 57 years of age. So some of them may not be suitable for a fire truck, but doesn't mean they can't work somewhere else. So what we're planning on doing or proposing to do with this is to work with our Humans Resource Division and develop this program and see what shakes out. We don't know how many people might be interested, but we know it's not going to cost us anything to try it.
The idea being, basically, if you have someone who's qualified, you can plug them in rather than taking someone and either working them double or incurring additional costs, overtime, those kind of things.
Yes, Mayor, that's exactly what we hope this program will do. And so we'll fire it up and see what happens with it. The other program, the next program, is a lateral program. And we've tried this program, and we're willing to try it again. The first time we tried it, we didn't have a tremendous amount of success with it. We tried it in 2007, but things were a lot different then. We feel that if we get the right mix of people, it can reduce our academy time, which therefore reduce our overall academy cost. Gets these people out in the field faster, relieve some of our overtime, might help with some of our peak time staffing issues, and it definitely reduces the cost of our initial training. And also, potentially, we could pick up some paramedics and some special teams people would relieve that cost. There's really no negative impact by doing it. We've already have a program in place. We just haven't exercised it for a number of years. We'll update that program, and we'll create an eligibility list. We may even keep an open recruitment until we get enough open candidates to establish a list.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins?
A quick question. The peak time staffing, does that mean someone could be employed, like, say, in Gilbert and just come and work certain shifts for us? Or is that an actual part-time staffing that only would be available working for us?
I think we're looking at somebody that's only going to be working for us, but where we plug them in may depend on our need.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the next slide, if I'm on the right pages, talks about the last time we were here, we had a recommendation to look at maybe temporary suspending Battalion 203. We went back and took a look at that, and what you have before you is the positions and then the dollar amount with that. As I've spoke with a number of you, it issues a few problems for us in the training and safety realm. So we wanted to come up with an alternative, which was Scenario A, and it's not the same dollar amount, but it's pretty darn close. But that would eliminate the command van drivers, the battalion safety officers of that group, and one of our day captains. As you can see down on the program model, Scenario A maintains our current level of battalion chiefs, and I'll talk about why that's important in a second. The next two bullets on that side really should probably say doesn't reduce it as much as Scenario B, because we do lose a little bit of battalion training time and also some safety from those battalion safety officers. But it does help us maintain a span of control. And that's where I want to shift to now with Scenario B. It really reduces our battalion coverage by a third, which geographically and from a time response is going to be very difficult to make up if we lose those battalion chiefs. It also reduces our battalion level training considerably. Last budget year, we realigned our training to save, and we saved quite a bit of budget dollars by putting that training out to the battalion chiefs. If we take one-third of the training staff out of there, it really leaves us in a bind. It's not that we can't do it. It's just going to challenge us greatly. And in the safety section on there, having that battalion chief, we have a lot of fairly new captains out there, long response times. We're having partial or full building collapse within 8 minutes of a response, and without having that other set of eyes or that command person out there, it really hampers us. And that last bullet increases the span of control. We also know by review on a national level, when there is a tragedy on the fire ground that results in an injury or death of a firefighter, there's two overriding factors that bear in there. One is communication, and not necessarily I'm talking about you don't have a good radio system, just a breakdown in communications in general, and it's a breakdown in command. This Scenario B contributes to both of those. That's why we're recommending Scenario A as an alternative.
All right. Councilman Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. Are those seven positions gone, and then in addition, those seven people are laid off, or are those seven people moving into different positions? What's
Now, we will attrition out those seven positions. You're talking about scenario?
Scenario A.
No, we would attrition those out, which means that they would go into our leave pool, and it would help offset overtime until somebody retired, and they would drop into that spot.
Nobody would be laid off.
In this group. In either scenario, nobody would be laid off.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Fenter.
And what I think is important to note here, we have two different initiatives going on. We're in the emergency kind of initiative. There's only so much money this year. This is kind of a short term. Let's take a look at the real emergency, the 5%. Then there's innovative looks at how we do business, if it's TRVs or whatever. So what I've seen out in the community is there's a misunderstanding that somehow this is going to be the way we do business. I personally don't agree. You know, I'm concerned about the safety aspects of it, but I understand we're just trying to get through this year, or maybe it's next year. But just realize that it's I know we're careful about the words we use, but in this time of difficulty, this is just trying to get us through. This is not changing the way we do business, especially towards safety.
And I think that takes care of the emergency operations update.
Ready?
Mayor, Council, I'm going to describe two scenarios for the reduction proposals, for fire prevention, and then one for the fire and life safety education. For fire prevention under scenario A, essentially we reduce or eliminate 12 positions, as noted on your paperwork. That eliminates two investigators, one inspector supervisor, six inspectors, one fire protection engineer, and two office assistants. Essentially what we're left with is a fire marshal, one 40-hour investigator, one inspector supervisor, five actual inspectors, one senior program assistant, and one ASA-1. What we've done in trying to manage the number of inspections that we have with fewer people is we've reduced the frequency of the inspections. We currently inspect high-risk occupancies every year, and we do medium-risk occupancies every other year. We would reduce that to high-risk occupancies every other year and medium occupancies every third year, just to lower the number of yearly inspections we can do with the number of people we have available to do them. In both scenario A and B, we retain the Fire Safety Operational Permit Program, which is the $15 charge, and we also retain the Fee Recovery Program, which is the there's a certain fee for each inspection. The scenario B is very similar, other than it eliminates two additional inspectors, and it does have the which is yet to be determined exactly how this would work out, but we're looking at a public-private partnership with respect to having the medium inspections done by a outside entity of some sort. We have done some preliminary investigation as to what the interest would be in that area. We haven't had an overwhelming response, but it's been pretty similar. So we'll continue to look at that to see how that might play out. Some of the things that concern us would be the reduced frequency, meaning we're not getting into the businesses yearly. On the positive side, it keeps us engaged in the community. It keeps the fire fire inspectors engaged in the businesses and also in tune with the fire operations group.
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. What type of, like when you say medium risk every other year, what kind of building are we talking about? Just so you know, we understand.
Just a less risk business, smaller businesses.
Like offices, or you still like industrial stuff? Or
yes. If it gets down into the office realm, it's more of the FSOP. That's the low risk.
Okay.
Anything that poses, just from historical perspective, anything that poses any kind of a risk to the citizens or the community, if it's at a level that has been predetermined to be not a high risk, then it'll go into the medium risk category.
That would be a facility maybe without any toxic kind of chemicals and flammable type of stuff stored on site.
Mayor, primarily they're mercantile type occupancies where the public does come in and visit. They're typically, at least in I mean, it's across the nation, high frequency of fires and those types of occupancies, and so that's why they're generally categorized as mediums, and we try to get in them every other year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Richens.
What kind of companies would take on this inspection process? And because I know some of them just do, like, fire extinguishers and exit signs and stuff like that. I mean, this is really another step above that. Are there companies out there that could even are in a position to respond to an RFP on this?
We really haven't found any yet. We sent out 61 inquiries throughout the valley for fire protection companies, and we've gotten about 15 responses back. The initial interest is great. It wanes somewhat when they figure out that there's a substantial number of inspections to do. The one thing on the scenario B that we're running into is that we would have to figure out a way. They want nothing to do with billing in any way, shape, or form. They would rather contract with the city and have us pay them and then have us retain all of the billing facilities. So we're not sure how that would work out to be of a benefit to the city or them.
How would the liability be handled as far as
that's a problem as well. I spoke with Alfred concerning the liability. We are the authority having jurisdiction. There would have to be something in the RFP, and I'm not sure how that RFP would be written. We would still be the authority having jurisdiction with some sort of contractual arrangement as to how they would be able to go into these businesses.
How is it handled now for a fire extinguisher?
It's handled all the way through the company. They just report to us their findings.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems to me like we have a liability either way. If we don't do anything, we're sitting there. If we have, at least they're getting looked at, and at least we've got that. But I appreciate the fact that you're working on it. I get it that there's challenges to overcome, but I appreciate the fact that you're looking at it and considering all this alternative.
Mayor, would that be premature to, like, go with option B since we don't have anybody ready to go in that spot? I'm honestly.
Councilmember Higgins, Mayor, based on the limited time we've had to look into this, we believe it probably is premature in terms of looking at it as a solid dollar offset as a budget reduction. But we think it could possibly have some promise in the future, as we're not aware of another agency in the valley that has pursued this approach to code enforcement. And therefore, the companies haven't had a chance to form and prepare a response for this. So we're putting it out there. We're going to keep our mind open. Where we can use it, especially to augment what we think is important every day and do it in a way that makes sense, we want to be able to keep that as an option.
Great, thank you.
We've actually put the feelers out nationwide through some of the sources that we have, and we're hoping to hear something back. We're looking for any similar model that exists out there.
My guess is there's something to be done. Someone will figure out how to make it work.
Sure.
And it sounds like, especially on low and medium type risk, this is a great way that we can look at something. That, and it's not a matter of doing it cheaper or anything, but it's a matter of us being able to concentrate with the resources we have available on those areas of highest risk. I mean, that's our reality. That's what we're dealing with right now. And I appreciate the fact that you are out there shaking the hedges, so to speak, and I think that maybe something good will come out of it. But I appreciate you haven't had time to do that, and it'll take time to develop this. So thank you.
One more question on that page. Are there any sworn officers that are being laid off permanently, or is anybody sworn being reassigned out of this list, or are they positions and people gone?
The two investigators are both sworn.
Okay.
We would our plan is to retain one of the inspectors as a 40-hour position. Investigator, if I said inspector, I'm sorry. And then the other two, we have discussed amongst senior staff about how to reassign them or what the options are available to reassign them into a position within the fire department in a different capacity.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Next is the fire and life safety education. There's only one proposal that we have put forth. That eliminates 3.5 positions. One of those positions is vacant currently. The net effect of that, what we would try to do is to maintain all of the programs that we currently have. Granted, some of them would be reduced, probably significantly, just depending on how this worked out, trying to work out the number of things that we're trying to do with the number of people that we have left in the process.
Question. Councilman Higgins.
So when you say that, you know, you say retain connector program, but is that, are we talking significantly reducing the ability to get those volunteers involved, or what are we looking at significantly reducing?
Well, essentially, the programs would remain in place. Just by the sheer volume of the things that they do with the reduced number of people, we'd have to readjust and reorganize all those programs so that we could maximize our ability to do everything that we can. I don't know exactly what that is yet.
Do you see, you know, without the staff involvement, that a lot of the volunteers that currently work in these programs wouldn't be able to be involved? I mean, would you think these programs will be reduced because we don't have the staff to coordinate them? I guess that's the question.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Guess?
Mayor,
you know, like
Member Higgins, the areas where we currently have volunteer support, we're going to make a high priority to maintain the activity of those groups. In terms of the other programs that we do, car seats, for example, some of the CPR training, those types of things, we may not, there may be periods of time where we're not going to be in a position to provide any service in that area. Hopefully we can look at seasonal adjustments in the service demands in each of those areas. So we wouldn't do away with those opportunities completely, but we would be significantly restricted in some of those areas as we attempt to really maintain the volunteer services as we currently have.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. Brady, with respect to the fire and life safety reductions, I guess I have a major concern with this particular reduction, because I think that if we adopted this, we don't have an option. It's just, this is the proposal. I think if we adopt this, we run the risk, I think, of significantly increasing risk to the community in the future if we're reducing our services in terms of drowning prevention, car seats, the education programs in schools, because we know that the school programs, the risk watch programs, the school programs do have a significant impact overall in terms of the lives of the individuals who participate in those programs over their lifetime. And this is one where I just have a strong concern that it's a short-term solution creating a long-term increased risk and liability to the community. So I'm hoping this is an area where we can still continue to explore options to maintain. I hate to lose these 3.5 positions, because it really cuts the heart out of a program that is nationally respected. But over the last 10 years, I think we have to have, we've done such a wonderful job, I think, to prevent future injuries and deaths in the community. And in reducing it to this extent, I have a concern. We're maintaining programs that are important, but the reduced levels may have an increased cost on us to the operation side, with the additional responses to injuries at motor vehicle accidents, at drownings, at fires in homes, and things like that. I think ultimately we end up paying a higher cost in terms of operational costs and a higher cost in terms of lives and injuries to the community. So I'm just hoping that we can work on this one as we look at the issues over the next couple of weeks. Thank you, Mayor.
Mayor, if I may just add quickly, echo what Councilmember Kavanaugh is saying in that the programs within this area of community services focus on mostly children and elderly. They are our high-risk groups. We have equal concern, as you do, Councilmember Kavanaugh. What we're looking forward to is the future, as the mayor has pointed out, and Councilmember Vinter has pointed out, is we're looking at trying to get through this situation without decreasing at least our contacts in the community so that we can maintain these programs. We will continue to look at volunteers into these areas as well. Hopefully we can continue to build a cadre of volunteers to help support some of these things. This program in particular has received national recognition for its quality and its efficiencies. So it's very near and dear to us as well. And you can bet we're going to do everything we can to try to make sure those services are retained in the community through some method.
Great. Thank you. Let's go on to the...
Mayor and Council, the slides 10 and 11 summarize the fire reduction proposals. And I'm going to go ahead and skip over to slide 12. On slide 12, you will see the summary of all of the reductions. If we were to go with the scenario A's, which would be the fire prevention, fire and life safety education, and the alternative to Battalion 3, along with the other reductions that we made in April when we came before you before, we would see total reductions of $2.5 million. When that is offset by the academy that is proposed, that would bring our net reduction to $1.6 million. When we left you on the 8th of April, we had a target of $1.8 million. And you can see that by taking scenario A, we are shy of that by $217,000. If you are to accept scenario B's, that would be the same, but the prevention side of that would be the high and the mediums with the private partnership. That would bring our net reduction to $1.7 million. And again, we would be shy of our 1.8 target by $100,000.
Okay, Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And just a question, clarification, Mayor. If option A, for example, is adopted and the 28.5 positions are eliminated, how many people will actually lose their jobs?
25.5.
Thank you.
Now, and then just real quickly on this one, this is scenario A's, or should it be scenarios A? That's
Mayor,
A on the first
yeah,
one.
Yeah, let me just make
one?
Sure. Really, the difference is in how we treat the fire prevention
correct
element. And really, based on the yeah conversation that we had today, is what it sounds like is while the private public option may be something we want to pursue, what I would suggest is we assume we keep it, we do the less frequent model initially, but give us during the year to continue to develop
and
that private model and grow that out. Yeah. And if there's savings in that model, then that would accrue back to the fire department over a period of time. And that's something we could phase in even through attrition with existing staff. So it would allow us one to build, kind of continue to look at that idea, build that system up, working with the private sector, gives the fire department some time to work on it. But essentially, we'll go to the less frequent basis as this proposed under option A.
Mm-hmm. A. Okay.
And so that, I think, is that fair? I think that I'm just trying to pull together
it gets conversation. We can fill in some of the gaps okay later. Let's go on to the slide 13 if we can. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mayor and Council, that also assumes that if we take the scenario A's, that's the difference between Battalion 3 and the alternative to Battalion
3. Oh, that's right. And I hear any council concern about that. We get significant amount of savings. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Slide 13.
Okay, Mayor and Council, I'd like to give you an update on our transition of response vehicles, or TRVs. We ordered some a while back. They're due in sometime in June. Take us 30, 45 days to get them outfitted. Just quickly, I'll go over and just remind everybody, when we put this program together as a pilot about 3 years ago, our long-term solution was to fill gaps in the service. We have gaps created by call volume, sometimes because of travel distance, and other seasonal influx by our winter visitors. All three of these tax our services now and stretch them beyond what they can handle. The focus of this project was never intended to be a one-year budget fix. From the early conception of the program, we knew it was going to be, by the time we got it fully implemented, it could be 5, 10, even 15 years before we had these fully outfitted and the number that we needed in the city to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the response. Our goals have always been to match the right response to the problem. If it requires four people with two paramedics, we'll send that unit. If it requires a unit with less people on it to manage that call, we'll do that.
We want to reduce the call volume of the ALS companies, especially those that are running 2,500 to over 3,000 calls, which we have a number of those. About 12 to 15 of our units are doing that. Improve the availability of our first due. We know from past pilots that we have, when we put one of these in service, that unit itself at that station has a better first due response time, and it overall improves our response times. The development plan, again, we expect them in early June. It'll take us 30, 45 days to get them outfitted and get them out. We are working with our medical director currently to modify 16 of our current call types. These aren't brand new ones. We've had them on the books for years and years, but we want to review the questions that are asked at our dispatch center, and we feel we can appropriately triage the right unit and get more calls for these units. We're going to create 4 emergency response zones. We've also known from our pilots, because we've experimented with this, if we can create zones where they're automatically dispatched from our dispatch center, not relying on a person to make that judgment by listening to a radio, we increase the number of calls and the efficiency of these units. We proposed on starting with peak time coverage. We will expand the response areas and the times as the program is funded, and we're working with the city manager's office currently to secure some operational funds to staff these vehicles on an overtime basis for the peak period time.
And so, Mayor and Council, just let me quickly recall that when the council, we set the priority of implementing the TRVs, we made some immediate, took some immediate actions. We've added 3 fire captains into the dispatch to the alarm room who are there to help out with the protocols. We've visited with the medical director. He's going to continue to follow up on helping us with the how the calls come in and helping us make sure we are sending, matching up the calls with the incident that's coming in. That's an ongoing. We will do this, and I want to be clear because there's been a lot of conversations recently about the dispatch center and the possibility of splitting that up and separating the police and fire elements. I don't think this idea that what we're doing here in TRVs is really specifically directly related to that. It may be in some ways. I think the conversation about the separation still needs to happen possibly down the road as we continue to study that. I'd really like us to continue to focus on that and how it will work operationally, maybe even also bring in the element of redundancy. If council recall, when we had the original bond package, when the council first came on, we had a emergency operations center that was being contemplated. What I would imagine is that sometime it would be in the city's long-term best interest to, if we were to have a separate dispatching alarm system, alarm room, we would have it separated from the current facility as, and then also function as a emergency operations center, possibly as a regional one with other communities that surround us. And that way we gain the benefit of both creating the separate operations that fire can manage and police can manage, but we also get the benefit of the redundancy. And I think that's something we need to still keep working on. With the implementation of TRV, we can continue doing that within the existing structure for now, especially with they're only putting 4 in and using them on a limited basis. They will be funded with overtime for peak periods. But down the road, I think as the Public Safety Committee has been working on this, that other separation still needs to be discussed, but it really needs to kind of focus maybe on some larger issues going on to the future.
Councilmember Higgins.
Is it not possible to use that reserve program to operate the TRV program? Because, I mean, I look at a line item that says operations funded with overtime, and we're just setting it up to fail because it's going to cost too much. Overtime's all, right? We're looking at time and a half. So some of the people that are being, the jobs are being eliminated, they're going into the pool. Are those people able to move over and do this? Can you get some reserve people to fill in until you change things? And because, I don't see how you start a program knowing you're going to use it paid with overtime. That's my problem there.
Well, I don't think we ever imagined that we would be running TRVs as a full shift. I mean, that would be very expensive to run them on a 24/7 basis. I think we've always talked about, as Dan pointed out, the TRVs are supplemental. They're not supplanting anything. So if they're supplemental, we need to be able to flex them and use them on peak periods at different times of the week, different times of the day, which may not be a continuous time of a shift. And granted, overtime is expensive, but we already do that today to maintain minimum staffing we already do that. We already have the overtime. It would be a limited amount of dollars, but I think because we're only having four TRVs out there, I think adding the overtime, and that's how we ran the pilot program, if you recall, is we used it overtime.
Well, I think also, if you look at the math, Councilman Higgins makes a great point, time and a half versus straight time. But the fact is if you combine this with the fact this is gap coverage, it's peak period, it's, you know, you have to design it to where you have shifts that that work. And then you do the math, and if you can expand service, which is what we really want to get to, with this model versus a four-man truck, full-blown $750,000 truck.
To staff a four-person truck, you hire 13 people.
You still come out, I think, way ahead, even if you pay overtime. And once again, I think one thing to make that we need to be clear on, and I appreciate what you said, Dan, about we're going to phase into this. I think one of the misconceptions that I've heard is that somehow today we have no TRVs and tomorrow we're totally changing the world and we're going to have four TRVs that are going to be expanding, are going to be answering calls that, you know, splitting the hair type of calls. And actually, we're going to ease into this. We're not going to sacrifice life-saving situations just to experiment. We're going to start out with a low basis. We're going to learn as we go. We're going to learn what protocols work. We're going to learn how to split, how to determine, how to triage these calls. And we're going to ease into this so that hopefully a year or two down the road, when maybe we do have this renewed or this revised dispatch center, we have developed now a very well-defined database which tells us what works, when it works, where it works. And at that point in time, I think we'll be at the full capability where we can truly create this long-term solution that you're talking about, which will, once again, and as you said, Mr. Brady, is not to take the place of things, but it's to plug gaps. It's to increase our service at a much more efficient and effective level. And I appreciate the fact that you're making these first steps. These are big steps. And I appreciate the fact that we are easing into it. And I think we're doing it pretty much with our eyes open because we have done the test. We have done the experiment. We're not going to overextend our capabilities, or I'm confident we won't, because we know what we're dealing with. And that's where I think the overtime, you sort of need to, because the one thing we are going to sacrifice is the ability to have someone who's straight time, fully staffed 24/7. That wouldn't be a good step. So, well, maybe that's the cost of learning. Maybe that's the cost of creating that protocol database. And I appreciate that. So, any other questions? I think I had the same reaction when I first saw it. Gentlemen, gentlelady, thank you so very much. Wait, before you go, I'm trying to give you a compliment and you're running away. Good job. Okay, now you can go. No, no, really, I know this is tough. I know it's really difficult. I'd like to reiterate what Councilmember Finter said, that, you know, we have these long-term, like we just talked about, which I'm really excited about because they are changes in the way we provide service. We have other things that we're just holding on. We're going to get through this next year. It's not a situation anyone likes. It is our reality, and we will adjust to it. We will manage through it, and we'll be set up even better when things come back. And I hope next year that's the discussion we have. Okay, now we're going to figure out how we can reinstate some of these, how we can do better. So thank you for your efforts. I know there's been a lot of thought going into this, a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, and I appreciate the work you've done. Thank you. Okay, we will. Yeah. Unless you have some, let's get in the schedule of meetings.
This Wednesday, 2:00. The next group of recognitions for employees.
Okay.
2:00.
Okay. We have a motion to adjourn. Councilman Richards, second. Councilman Summers, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We're adjourned. We'll head upstairs pretty quickly. Thank you.